Aotearoa's longest-running live poetry event, Auckland's Poetry Live, is celebrating 40 eventful, often rowdy, but always entertaining years with a publication launched today called This Twilight Menagerie. Poets, both old-school and boundary-busting and experimental, still rock up to the microphone on Tuesday nights. And the roll call over those four decades includes luminaries like Alistair Campbell, Maurice Shadbolt and John Pooley, not to mention past and present poet laureates C.K. Stead, Ian Weddy and David Eagleton. Poetry Live was founded by the late David Mitchell, and its first home, the first of many as it happens, was the Globe Tavern on Wakefield Street. I spoke to performance poet Genevieve McLean, who's also David Mitchell's daughter, and to the anthology's co-editor Sam Clements, who explains the event's nomadic history.
We've had an enormous number of venues and so many.
You know what, I tried to pick up on all of the different venues and get a sense of a timeline about that. But to be exacting about, you know, who was emceeing at which venues over such a long period of time, when you stand back and look at the whole lineage, it's thousands of people's involvement as poets and hundreds as MCs. And even I missed one, which was the glue pot. I missed it out and I found it. I found an invitation tucked away in one of the books from Dave's estate, actually an old copy of the Globe tapes. And I found a little invitation to the opening, which was going to be, oh no, a little invitation saying that we're going to have the poetry readings now at the glue pot. So it moved around from pub to pub, but of course it all started at the Globe in Wakefield Street in 1979.
Well, you write with such affection and beauty and respect, Genevieve, about David Mitchell, and this really was his baby. Tell us about him and what drove him, because he does sound like a driven individual, to create this. And it didn't happen suddenly. It feels like it had a bit of a gestation.
Well, I've been looking over a few old writings and notes and bits and pieces, and I like what Stephen Chan said. Stephen published Dave's Pipe Dreams in Ponsonby, which is a pretty famous book. But Dave was driven by a great love for life. And as part of that avant-garde scene, they were part of that era, which Stephen calls an epoch in New Zealand that simply can't be repeated. They wanted to change the world. They felt that they could. They felt that they needed to, and it was a pretty exciting time for young artists in all different forms in the early 70s.
What do we know about these early poetry readings at the Globe Tavern on Wakefield Street?
Well, they were kind of rambunctious. There's footage in existence of those old readings from the Globe, and I have that footage in my belongings, but what is 40 years? It's quite a long time. And getting a perspective on that is different for everyone who was in the poetry world at a different segment of that time.
There's a lovely quote from you in the book. While some of us became reliable for shouty poems, others became renowned for quiet, exquisite, elemental work. And you talk about these punk poetry, wordless poems. I mean, there's a lot of experimentation. That must have been a big part of the joy of this.
For me, it was, yeah. I started performing as a teenager when the readings were at the Albion and the Shakespeare. I was influenced by Roger Horrocks, who was one of my teachers at Auckland University, and the idea of, you know, very simplistic at that time idea of postmodernism, that we were allowed to mix it up, that we were allowed to break rules. So I started singing. I started singing bits of blues, and I started incorporating, some pretty opinionated stuff for a 17-year-old, and there were already a few different kind of poetry forms that were happening at that time. And I think what's really fascinating is this lineage of different types of performance poetry, and that's something that this book, luckily, encapsulates. While we've got people who are contributing who can look back in time, you know, what we've got here is 40 years, but the different types of performance poetry still exist and have also changed quite a lot I mean, there's a thesis to be written here, but I don't think that I'm going to be doing it. Any takers?
Not me. Well, give me a year off anyway, Genevieve.
It's really the oral tradition part of performance poetry has gone through so many phases, and it's had to defend itself at times in different ways through those different phases. And it sits inside politics, and it sits inside what I always call the performance arena in society. You know, what's trendy in terms of theatre or fine arts or literature in the centre of society, who are witnessing that or audience to that. And it was so important to all of those people, some of whom have become very famous from the 70s for fine arts, but the performance poets and the spoken word artists at that time, apart from James Baxter and Dave and Sam Hunt was one, you know, there was a time there where they were kind of very famous for their renegade avant-garde stance, but they weren't especially loved by the establishment. And they made trouble, you know, they made trouble. And they spoke out vehemently about political issues as well. And there were women there doing the same thing in terms of 1970s representing, you know, they were very strident. So over time, and there are lots of different shifts and changes and lots of experimentation, and it was just as, when I say punk poetry, it was just as punk as you could imagine. When I say noise poetry, I mean, this is a genre that most people might not even know about, but noise poetry is something to explore. You know, when I talk to some young people today who are playing around with spoken word, they want to know what the rules are and what the answers are and how to do things properly. There were no rules.
I think one of the beautiful things always has been about Poetry Live, and the more people I talk to about Poetry Live in past decades and right up to the present day, Lynn, is just the variety of performance styles and styles of writing poetry and the different forms that present themselves and the wide range of ages, which is reflected in the anthology. So we have people in their early 20s right through to people in their 80s that are represented in the collection. So there's great diversity there. And a lot come and read their poetry and they perform it with a lot of vigour and a lot of passion. Others are very quiet readers. But they all have developed their own presence and their own poise over time. And it's wonderful to see their confidence develop as people come along. And we always give an especially warm welcome to first-time readers. And, you see them walking off the stage and they have a big beam on their faces and then they come back. And it really is there's a marvellous sense of community there and this mixing of all ages and celebration of the art form. And it's really, truly, it's far from elitist. I think there is still this view around that poetry and poetry readings are somehow a dry staith of affair, but nothing could be further from the truth. There's a lot of edginess and a lot of conversations that are started from the themes and the ways in which poets present their work.
Mm, there are ways of being edgy, aren't there?
Absolutely.
And being very theatrical too. I think the costumes and props
Well, you never know. Some people come dressed in costume and you don't expect it. But in the early days of Poetry Live, they used to have wonderful background murals behind the podium. And
Pat Hanley, for example, was one of the artists who contributed.
That's right, Pat Hanley. John Poulet, of course, who's one of our famous,
yes, of course.
Another famous painter and poet.
And there was a Claremont. The Claremont, I think, is missing, and I think it was on paper, so no one knows if it's survived or not. And I have the other one, which is a Dean Buchanan, a great, huge, great big canvas with a very linear picture of Rumbo.
Genevieve, what has this meant to you? I mean, this has been a big part of your life. And actually, as a writer yourself, you know, taking part in Poetry Live from that young 17-year-old, through, what has it meant to you as a writer? Has it made you a better writer? Has it made you a better reader? You know, this is all about sharing and listening, isn't it? This whole Poetry Live experience is about both of those things.
Yeah, well, I have a very personal connection to Poetry Live. And a lot of people know that Dave is my dad, but I stepped into Poetry Live at the age of 16. Dave wasn't there, and Dave was largely absent in my life. So people assume that I knew him when I was growing up. I didn't. I learned about him because I was his daughter through his absence and through literature. But that's not what made me go to Poetry Live. It was the very fact that it existed that made me go there. And because I knew about my absent dad and knew that he was a poet, I understood that it was something that you could do, that if you wanted to, you could just go and write poetry. So I did. But, it's been a huge part of my life, and I think that all poets, and there are many of them, and they're not all represented in this book. There's definitely room for a historical, collected book one day that actually accesses and lists who was there, who emceed. That would be a really interesting
thing. That's
another
project, isn't it?
That would be another different project. But, you're not going to find every poet from, 1981, for example. But there are some poets represented in this book who were there at that time. And anyway, for example, like Bob Orr or any poet who came, Bob Orr said this to me the other day, that he feels that the Poetry Live readings shaped his poetry, encouraged his poetry. Absolutely, of course, that's just essential. Every poet that comes along is not necessarily a poet when they first arrive, and it's only when they share something that they become one. And in that act of sharing something for the very first time, it's actually quite profound, and people's lives change, and people start observing life differently because they see themselves as an observer of life.
I think, too, the very interesting thing is James K. Baxter once said, I was reading one of the volumes of his letters and poems, and he said that, well, in New Zealand, the establishment won't regard you as a poet unless you've been writing for about 10 years. But his view was that in terms of whether you could describe yourself as a poet, he said, you know, as long as you produce a piece that has some sense of craft and form and some degree of layering to it, then he said you can call yourself a poet, even if everything else you write in your life is very rudimentary and crude. And I actually quite like that, because I think it acknowledges that, you might only produce a small handful of very sharp work or work that tugs at other people's emotions, but if you've done that once or twice, that is the mark of a poet.
I'm hungry now for poetry.
It's
like being at a banquet and just seeing the food. Now I want some poetry now. Genevieve, would you have one to share? No, I'd love one from you, Genevieve.
I do. Well, Lynn, one of the poems that I found particularly fetching was by a new young poet, and his name is, he's a Wellington poet, Luca Ventner, who's assistant conductor at the Wellington Symphony Orchestra, and he studied at the Institute of Modern Letters. And he hasn't been writing for long, but we were delighted to have his piece. And I'll read it for you. It's titled Exodus, Liquid Glass. It was unusual in the sense that nothing was unusual. The tires of my grandfather's turquoise Ford Galaxy spiraled down a road in the free state, so hot it shimmered. My shorts, so short, the seam of the leather back seat began to sear a line into my boyish thighs. It was when she mentioned the lack of rain that I noticed clouds, and I curled my legs up onto the small spot of shade behind the shelter of my grandma's body. And it was when we slipped like liquid glass from tar to the red-brown earth that the hulk of a black ball warped against the nose metal crushes two bodies like a pomegranate is crushed into a sieve against the unusual earth, my knees pulled in, the air shimmering. Odor of sweat and iron slick, and wet against my face, lightning, twice. Nothing was a seam quite like the sky ripped open.
Well, let's contrast that perhaps with one of the poets who've been around Poetry Live for a long time.
Actually, what I would love to read you is Stephanie Christie's, because she has been on the scene for many years, off and on, and her poem is titled Ghost Octopus. I tendril toward what intrigues, examine the sunk litter treasures, a bottle to hide in, a jaw full of teeth, slink between crevices warmed by underwater volcanoes, immune to the crush of metaphor, each of my eyes bigger than your head to pick up every hint of lost light in soft drifts. The cave is too small for my beak now. Feel away to the next phase in the mouth of a limpet-lined gigantic bivalve is a gap to swell into. This, for me, is success. I award myself a gold bangle, encrusted with purple cones that twist to face the current. My touch is legion. Eight arms examine your vocabulary. This intelligence they call alien, I say oceanic. I glide forward in the blue-black, deep where your instruments cannot reach.
Genevieve, I would love one of your poems.
I gave a very little poem for the book. I noticed the tendency I have to tangent when after exactly a lifetime, half of which had looked like sky, I found that you were once again in view. Ahoy, I say, and flip.
I see that heckling in the crowd was part of the norm, Genevieve. Is that still the case, or was that more in the early days?
Well, it depends what people do on stage to deserve it. Oh. So, yes, if you want to incite heckling, there are ways of going about that, you know, reading the same poem over and over. I once watched Graham Brazier performing, and he was so drunk, although I think it was a poetry night in a different venue, but he was so drunk, I think he would forgive me for saying so, because he wasn't less than proud of being drunk sometimes. But he did the same poem repeatedly several times because he actually forgot that he'd finished reading it. That kind of thing will get you heckling. I once saw somebody licking the pavement from the microphone all the way to the gutter and back. That's a kind of performance art poem that will get
sorry,
the audience
I missed that one.
On their feet. Yeah,
I think the beauty, Lynn, and it's one reason why I would always say to any young poet or any fledgling poet of any age that I would strongly encourage that they get involved in performance poetry, whichever part of the country they're in, city, town, country, wherever, or form a group. Because one of the great things about being involved in a group like Poetry Live is not only do you meet and make some wonderful friends for life, but you get an opportunity to test your work in front of an audience. And there's nothing like hearing yourself reading through a microphone and getting a feel for audience feedback and what works and what doesn't, and for listening to others and learning to develop your skills from what they're doing, and also to collaborate. And so many of our poets have performed at festivals all around New Zealand and overseas. They've collaborated in art spaces and museums. They've put collections of poetry together. And so many of them, I mean, some of our great names today, I mean, obviously, I mean, our current poet laureate, David Eggleton, who's in the collection, he cut his teeth at Poetry Live as a young man. Pete Noyland, another one, and Bob Orr, as Genevieve said, Michael Morrissey. So always I'd say go along and take part, and above all, come along to Poetry Live. We're every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock at the Thirsty Dog at 469 Coringa Happy Row. We have guest poet, guest musician, two sessions of open mic, and all are warmly welcomed and encouraged.
It's true. There is a lovely vibe down there, and it's a tricky thing being MC. I've never been MC, but Sam, your degree, it's a really particular kind of role.
It's very demanding. It's demanding.
Because you are the person who is warmly embracing those new poets when they come up and supporting them, or the shy ones, no matter how new they are. And poets who want to explore and should be allowed to, you know. Mm. And at the same time, if someone does a bad poem, there are ways of letting them know that. And I think in the old days,
gently, and then
there was a bit of booing and heckling and,
yes,
and thumbs down. But that's because there was some brazen kind of stance
I think things are a lot gentler today.
There was misogyny on display, where, and then the women would respond to that. You know, there were people who would, you know, they'd be boring. People would say, boring, you know.
We don't get that now.
We don't do that now.
And I think it's changing
times.
It's
much more supportive.
Yes, you know,
people
would
be much more concerned about taking care of people's feelings.
Absolutely. And we also have to be, we often get a lot of people who come to us for the first time and they've been going through quite a lot of big crises in their lives. And I can remember a few cases, and particularly it has to be said that the younger ones, and they get up there and they're quite nervous, but they express what's happening in their lives and it's very intimate and they're very brave. And when they get the support and encouragement with a real round of applause, and that really does boost their confidence enormously. And then, you know, quite often we see them coming back regularly and they become regulars. This often happens with people of all ages, and so it's lovely.
And there's a worldwide resurgence of poetry, of course. We've seen it online. So a lot of new poets turn up already quite good at what they're doing. Would you say so?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why it is so enriching and why we're so thrilled to put together this anthology, because we hope that it gives Poetry Live a launching pad for the next 40 years and beyond. And we all volunteer our time. We don't make any profit. Any profit that we make from the sale of the anthology is going to our outreach programs and to support the community of poets and to liaise with different other poetry groups.
Sam, how did you and when did you get involved?
Well, Lynn, this is where I'm actually tremendously honoured to have ended up being one of the editors, along with Jamie Trower, who's a truly a really gifted young up-and-coming poet of growing in national significance. He's still in his 20s. And I came along to Poetry Live 3 years ago, and so far from being an old hand, I'm very much, I think I would be regarded by the old ones as a fledgling, perhaps even a little bit of an upstart. But I was asked 2 years ago if I would like to be an MC when a spot came up, and I knew that the other MCs were very much gifted, enthusiastic, and did great work for Poetry Live, and I thought this is a wonderful opportunity to get involved. I've only been writing poetry myself for about 6 years, and so I think in middle age to be entering into this area and to have been embraced by the Poetry Live whānau and to have had a lot of wonderful performance opportunities and the chance to develop my craft and also to be editing this book has been extraordinary. I think my arts background, I have a performing arts background and a bit of an academic background, and I think those came together to, you know, contribute something solid to the editing of this work. And Jamie, who has published 2 collections of poetry already, just had a natural artistic eye for things like layout and form. And we both had very shared artistic sensibilities and vision for the work. So it was actually a delight to end up being involved in the position that I was.
How on earth, over 40 years and so many poets and so many poems and stars of poetry, have you got this down? I think I got to around about 200 poems and reminiscences. I think that must have been incredibly tough. And were you also taking into account this, you know, this is about spoken poetry, poetry that would work also on the page?
Actually, Lynn, it was a fascinating process because we actually had, in the end, 78 poets that appeared in the book. And we did, when we made a call out for submissions, we did because it was a thing of community and we wanted to celebrate all poets, whatever stage they were at, whether they were fledgling poets or they were some of New Zealand's leading names. We're very much about the whānau of poetry and Poetry Live. And so we said, you know, we will publish one of your pieces, but please submit 3 of them. And we didn't know what we would get and what the standard would be like, but Jamie and I were absolutely thrilled. We had about 240 poems that we had to sift through. We both blind assessed them and ranked them. And one of the most extraordinary things was that at the end of the process, and it was very hard because the standard was actually very high overall, that we only had differences of opinion on 5 of the 240 poems. And this was sort of extraordinary. And so by some miracle, what we ended up with was just this lovely and beautiful flow of work, and everyone put in their best efforts. And so that was quite a delight.
This Twilight Menagerie, Whakaanui of 40 Years of Poetry Live, is co-edited by Sam Clements. I was also talking to Genevieve McLean, and there will be an extended version of that interview going up very soon onto the Standing Room Only webpage. And if you've been to a Poetry Live event over the past 40 years, either reading or in the audience, love to hear about it. Email standingroomonly@rnz.co.nz or text us 2101.